Hi, I'm Deborah Lindad, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. Because even though there's toxic chemicals all around us in consumer products, in the environment, and in our homes, there are many things that we can do to reduce our exposure, remove toxic chemicals from our body, and be healthy, happy, and productive. Today is Wednesday, May 8th, 2013. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and today we're going to be talking about all kinds of things that we can do around the house to be less toxic with my guest, Annie B. Bond. But first, I just want to talk to you about something I was thinking about today, and that is I was looking around and I realized that there were just some things that I have given up on. Have you ever given up on something? Have you ever decided that you just can't do it and it's just not worth the trouble or the money or the whatever to try to move forward in that direction? And I realized that there were some things that I had made that decision about. Fortunately, I haven't made that decision about toxics. That's the most important thing. But, you know, I realize that sometimes it's not always the top priority to clean my house or something like that. And I realized that our decisions to do something or not do something, it's really our decision. And if I want to get something done in my life, if I want to improve something in my life, it really is up to me. But other people may have the information, like I have information about toxics. But if I want to get it done in my life, it's my decision. And so I'm hoping that some of you listening who may think, I can't do this or that or the other thing, will decide that you can and that you can do something about toxics and other things that are important to you in your life. And that if we don't do things for ourselves and to make the world a better place, who will? So my guest today, as I said, is Annie B. Bond. And Annie and I have known each other since, I just looked it up, 1990. And we are good friends and kindred spirits in the realm of keeping a non-toxic, toxic-free, safer house. We met in 1990 when her publisher asked me to write the foreword to her first book, Clean and Green. And both of us have been writing since on this subject. Each of us in complementary realms, and Annie has done a lot of good work. She's written for Body and Soul magazine. She's written for the care2.com website. She just is very, very, very knowledgeable and experienced in this subject for almost as long as me. Welcome to the show, Annie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, Deborah. And I, you know, it's what's interesting is we actually met before 1990. We met when I was a fan in an audience, and I hadn't written my book yet, and so I was just a face in there because you came to Hanover, New Hampshire, and spoke, and I was just, you know, I was just so glorious. It was so wonderful to hear you. I was so thrilled.
Thank you.
So it goes back a ways, and I remember us also at a talk there that were a lot of green, it was on green certification and experts or something like that. And you and I wrote back notes. We sat next to each other. We were at a big conference and we were sending notes back and forth. And I've kept them for all these years because I was thinking at someday these notes are going to be worth the money because here were these two people writing all about, you know, cleaning with baking soda and everything else. And we were pioneers and that maybe someday somebody would recognize that we were.
Well, so I remember doing that with you. And I remember too, maybe about a year, we published a magazine together, Greenkeeping. And
yep, exactly.
Then, yeah, I mean, so we've known each other and have done things throughout the years, and I'm sure that we'll just continue indefinitely.
Well, but let me just say, though, that you were the one that blazed the way. So it helped because you'd blazed the way. It was like, oh, my gosh, I have some things to say about this, too, and jumped in, you know, so as part of the conversation. So, you know, kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I have your books sitting on my desk here. Clean and Green, Better Basics for the Home, Home Enlightenment. I don't have True Food, but I looked at it in a bookstore. And it's an excellent book. And by the way, that was the winner of the Gourmand Awards Best Health and Nutrition Cookbook in the world. So Annie is quite recognized herself. But inside this early edition of Clean and Green, from one of the a book from the first printing,
right.
It says, "For Deborah, thank you for paving the way with a big smile and for sharing our vision of a clean earth." Wonderful. And we do share that vision. So, Annie, tell me, so after you heard me speak and decided you had something to say, but tell us what else influenced you to, why did you have something to say? What was it that you wanted to say? What was your personal experience that brought you to be interested in toxics?
Well, it was one of those whacks over the head that, you know, nobody could make it up if you tried it. You just never imagined this particular scenario for your life. I had been captain of my high school ski team. I grew up on skis in New Hampshire. I was incredibly healthy. I was a painter and a sculptor and was helping my husband get through graduate school. And I was working at a restaurant that had a gas leak, and it sent 80 people to the hospital. It was one of those sort of catastrophic moments. And this was 1980, and I didn't go to the hospital because I was very healthy, but I had been I've been breathing the air so deeply because I was a waitress and it was a wedding party. And so I went to the hospital. The line was so long, and I didn't really go because I wasn't like I was passing out or anything. But it was on a dime at that moment. My life has never been the same since. I know now that I got permanent central nervous system damage from it, or so they say, the doctors say. But it was a long journey to understand what happened, because environmental medicine doctors just didn't really, they were very, 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 very rare at that time. So I started going to the health clinic of the college where my husband was, and I kept getting one weird symptom after the other. I mean, I'm a classic onset of multiple chemical sensitivity, put it that way. I just was, boom, all of a sudden everything started happening to me. I'm a textbook case practically. Mm-hmm. So I ended up getting the doctors finally just didn't know what to do with me, and they sent me to a psychiatrist. And our apartment building was then exterminated with a pesticide that's been taken off the market because it's so neurotoxic. And I ended up getting very, very clinically depressed, actually. It was a 1-2 punch to my central nervous system. And they exterminated the apartment building again, and I went hospitalized myself. I was in the hospital for 3 months. And in a psych unit, because they didn't know to look for organophosphate pesticide poisoning, which is what I had. And it then, I'm sorry, I'm giving you a long version. The short version is that I have a sister.
Well, I don't mind the long version, except that we only have 2 minutes till the break.
Yeah, that's what I was just realizing. But so let me just tell you in a nutshell what happened, you know, to get us to the break, and then we can move on. But I have a sister who just always felt, she's a biochemist actually, and she's just like, what happened to Annie? Find 1 minute, find not the next. And she found one of the first environmental medicine doctors in the world that happened to be in the town at city I lived in. And I went to him, and they tested me, and I was just a bubble case. I mean, it was off the scale to everything they tested me to in terms of my environment, my reaction to my environment. So the central nervous system gets damaged, and it's like a domino effect, and the immune system gets damaged. Mm-hmm. And I was allergic to the world. I was one of those cases. So that was me, and I had to figure out how to live in our world without chemicals. And I did, and thank God. And my body was just unerring for clean air, and I figured out how to do it. And after that, I was like, oh, my God, I've got to help people learn how to live this way.
Yeah, that was exactly my experience. I didn't have so much exposure as you did, but because I was just in my home giving piano lessons. But I got really sick, and then I had to figure out where the toxic chemicals were, and when I removed them, my body got better, and I said, oh my God, I need to tell people, because this, if you're not sick now, you will be, so start reducing your exposure to toxic chemicals now, because what Annie and I both went through can be prevented. Nobody needs to be sick from this. And Annie and I will be back after the break. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. and we're here with Annie B. Bond, author of many books and as much as experience almost as I've had in living toxic free. So Annie, what do you think is the number one thing, if you were just going to tell people to start here, what would you tell them?
Oh, well, goodness. Well, I guess the first, the probably in terms of the most damaging for the for health that I can see, I would say to use all in integrated pest management and not use synthetic pesticides. I have other, you know, tips that are more contextual with living a less toxic life in the home and cleaning and dry cleaning and all that kind of thing. But I think that it's one thing to I know more people that got sick because of flea bombs and things like that than I know of about any other things. So that would be my number one recommendation, would be to test the pesticide history of a house. A lot of pesticides are long lasting, and there is mitigation you can do. So to actually have open eyes about the pesticide load that you might be carrying in your home. Would you disagree with that?
I would agree with that in terms of them being the most toxic. For me, and I think you would agree with this too, what I'm about to say, I always tell people to start with cleaning products. And the reason I tell them to start with cleaning products is it's so easy to use less toxic cleaners. And I think that it's a little more complicated to learn how to control pests. Although let's talk about both of those things today so that people can really get the idea and really focus on those. Annie's first book is called Clean and Green. And the whole entire book, I have her book sitting on my desk here. And Clean and Green is about a half inch thick. And Better Basics for the Home is about an inch thick. And Home Enlightenment is about 2 inches thick.
So the next one's going to be like 3 inches thick.
Yeah, something so. Like that. But where Annie started was with cleaning products. And what she did was she said, how am I going to find ways to clean the house that are not toxic? And the subtitle is 485 ways to clean, polish, disinfect, deodorize, launder, remove stains, even wax your car without harming yourself or the environment. And I can't tell you how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people probably learned how to clean non-toxically from Annie's book, because it just has been the resource for many years, going back many, many years. And but in my book, at the time before this came out, I had a handful of recipes, formulas of things for people to do. Like one I always like to mention first is just clean your windows with half and half vinegar and water. You don't need ammonia. You don't need the stuff in the blue bottle. You can just use vinegar and water to clean your windows, to clean your mirrors. And I just spray it on. If you don't already have a bottle from your old window cleaner that you could reuse, you can just go down to the hardware store and buy a heavy-duty plastic bottle with a good spray mechanism, you know, the kind that you squeeze with your hand and not your finger. Get one of those good spray mechanisms, and that will last you for probably your lifetime, that one plastic bottle. It's made out of a non-toxic plastic, and just keep refilling it and refilling it with vinegar and water, and then wipe with a soft cotton towel. And that's something that everybody can do, because everybody listening has vinegar in their kitchen. So that's why I start with cleaning products. So, Annie, why don't you give us some other tips about cleaning?
Well, it's interesting, because when you asked me that first question, my mind was waffling between talking about the signal words on products and the cleaning under the kitchen sink, if that's where people keep their cleaning products, and pesticides. And I finally went with a heavier toxic just for protection of people's health. But certainly, right. I completely agree with you about cleaning. I mean, that's what I was waffling. I mean, it's the one way that people repollute their home all the time is with cleaning products. It's the easiest thing to do. The one easy way to go at a start with it is to go through your cleaning products that you have and and look at the signal words. There, the government does do some things to protect us in terms of health with cleaning products, and one is to, and basically the only thing really are these signal words, which make it that if it says flammable or fatal if swallowed or something like that, you have a really good indicator right there that that's not something that you want in your house. So what I would do is find out your local household hazardous waste pickup day, and but regardless, even that if you have to store things in a garage or somewhere for a while, you want these out of your house. Go through and take out everything that it has a signal word that's stronger than a caution. Detergents, even green detergents, have to have a caution on them because they are one of the top reasons for childhood poisonings. And so even like a vegetable-based detergent will say caution on it. So what I would suggest
Can I ask you a question? Let's just insert something here. And that is the difference between what's called an acute poison and a chronic poison. And so while it might be okay to breathe some of these detergents, say, if your child were to drink it, if it's sitting under the sink, that's why they have poison control centers, or this is called an acute poison. And that's what people thought of for many, many years. When Annie and I first started dealing with this problem in our own lives, mostly if you were to say the word poison, people would think of that, you know, what you call the poison control center for, what those signal words are. But since, science has found that we're exposed to all these toxic chemicals, breathing and rubbing them on our skin, and in very small amounts, they accumulate from day to day and then make us sick over time. And I think a lot of people still don't understand that there's two kinds of poisons. And so they think, well, I'm not drinking it, or I have it on a high shelf, or
yeah, I think that's
whatever.
A very good, really good point. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was going to add the caveat that just because it even has a caution on it doesn't mean that it's a product that I would allow in my home, especially if it has a fragrance in it or a synthetic fragrance or something like that. But at least it's a good starting point to get solvents out of the house. Petroleum-based
it is,
solvents
if it has, particularly if it has a skull and crossbones on it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. You know, I was helping my parents-in-law clean out their garage, and here I am, a chemically-sensitive person. I came across a bottle that had a can powder spilling out of it, and it was a pesticide that was taken off the market in the 70s. I mean, I could not believe it. It's amazing. And I mean, there couldn't have been enough skull and crossbones to put on that can to get it across, how toxic it was.
We need to go to break, but we'll be back and continue on with Annie B. Bond and myself talking about how to have a non-toxic home. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm here with Annie B. Bond, author of Clean and Green, Better Basics for the Home, Home Enlightenment, and other books. And you can go to her website at Annie, A-N-N-I-E, B, Bond, B-O-N-D, .com, AnnieBBond.com, and find out what she's doing. And you can also go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and find out more about this show and learn about the rest of my website. So, Annie, we were talking about all the different toxic chemicals and acute and chronic and signal words. And I agree with you about the signal words, that if you see something really dangerous on there, like skull and crossbones or danger, then you can be sure that it's something that you don't want in your house. On the other end, I found that if it just says caution, that I have to use my own judgment, because like Bon Ami says caution, but there's nothing toxic in it. It has a caution label because of dust. It's a dust hazard, not a toxic hazard. So I think that you need to, on that end of the spectrum, we need to be evaluating what exactly is the hazard and why is that signal hazard there.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Well, give us a couple of suggestions on homemade things that people can use instead of toxic commercial cleaning products.
Well, I once had a editor come to talk to me about the products of butt cleaning products and everything else. And she got so enraptured with what's under my kitchen sink that she
what's
just
under
the
your
whole
kitchen
article,
sink?
Yeah, it just ended up telling, the whole article is about it, because with these five, I have five ingredients, actually sometimes only down to four in a way, that I use for absolutely everything, and I find that I can clean anything in the house with them, and so that would be what I recommend. But let me just give you one of my very, very best recipes, because I just don't want this one to go by by forgetting it. And that is that I grew up with the old-fashioned scouring powder for the bathtub, and you get in the bathtub and you still have the grit and everything. And
yeah.
So I came up with this recipe for it back with Clean and Green, because my publisher's wife wanted an alternative. And so this is my soft scrubber. It's that, and you put about a half a cup of baking soda in a bowl, and then you use a, get a good green vegetable-based detergent, such as there are various brands if you go to a health food store that you use for liquid dishwashing or just an all-purpose green detergent. You could also use a soap, a liquid soap, a liquid Castile soap, like a Dr. Bronner's or something like that, if you'd prefer not to use a detergent at all. And so you just squirt in enough of this liquid material and stir until it has a texture like frosting. And then you just scoop it on a sponge and scrub the tub with it, and it's just unbelievably quick to rinse. One of the things about baking soda, which I love as a cleaning product, but sometimes it's hard to rinse if it's by itself. But with the soap or detergent here, it adds the rinsing quality, and it's just an incredible product. And it's one that is so good that it also works incredibly well on stainless steel appliances. And I know a lot of people have trouble with trying to, keep the streaks and things off of those, and it works incredibly well for that. So
great.
That's a great, wonderful, wonderful product. So.
Well, let's compare what we have under our kitchen sinks, because I might have the same four products. What do you use?
No, I bet we do. So mine have sort of shifted a little bit. So let me start with the five, and then I'll tell you how I've shifted to four. And then my five originally would have been, and I would always, they're still under there, so maybe I have like seven under there now. But it's baking soda.
Yes.
Vinegar.
Yes.
A good all-purpose soap or detergent.
Yes.
A washing soda.
No, I don't have washing soda.
Yeah, and the reason I have washing soda is that it's my best alternative to solvents, because it eats up, if you have an oil engine oil stain, it will eat it up. It will peel wax off a floor. It'll clean soot. It'll do amazing things if you use enough of it. And it's in the laundry section of the supermarket near Borax, and I just find that it's a really powerful. It doesn't give off fumes, but it's fairly alkaline, so you need to wear gloves. But it's more alkaline than baking soda,
right.
And it's in the same family as baking soda. It's just been processed differently, and so, that's my solvent alternative. That's why I'll always keep that one for me anyway. That's what I would do.
I think I don't have it because I don't need to be cleaning those kinds of things that you just listed. But if I would.
Yeah, if you were lived in northern New England like I have most of my life, soot and fireplace soot and things like that become, with the garages, whatever. I've also, when I was really sick and I was renting still, we moved into places like there was wax on a kitchen floor that had a scent, and I just absolutely had to get it off with a non-toxic way. And and that washing soda is what peeled it right up on me, and it was unbelievable.
So what's the last
thing? So it's a great tool for that, yeah. And my fifth thing would have been tea tree oil, and I would use that as a broad spectrum fungicide, and I would use a teaspoon to a cup of water. So if I had a bureau that had mildew or something like that, I would spray it with that mixture, and it's incredible. Within 2 days, the smell of the mildew would completely leave, and so would the smell of the tea tree oil, and I wouldn't ever rinse anything. It would dissipate. Since then, I've changed two, which I'll tell you, and then I'd love to hear what yours are. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I happened to get on a plane in L.A. to New York, and who should sit next to me but the world's expert on vinegar from Australia?
Oh, my God.
I know. It's just unbelievable. And he just kept talking to me about vinegar, what an incredible disinfectant it is. And with the in the U.S., there's all this hoopla around using the word disinfectant legally. And as I presume, well, there should be, but what it means is that vinegar companies that produce vinegar don't have the millions and millions of dollars to go through all of the analysis to show that vinegar is actually a disinfectant. But he completely wowed me about how it kills germs, it kills fungus, and it kills bacteria. And so I will often use vinegar instead of tea tree oil. It's a lot cheaper. It's the smell, I think, dissipates faster. And so that's a good alternative. It's also a great for killing, just for killing germs. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then the other product that I started using a lot more of is sodium percarbonate, and I get that through Ecover. Has one brand that is their laundry whitener, and it's just 100% mm-hmm. pure sodium percarbonate, and I use that to whiten my sinks. I just really like how it whitens really well, and I'll use that in the laundry sometimes.
But, and that's also called oxygen bleach, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
that's what they use actually in Bonami instead of chlorine bleach. Sodium percarbonate.
Exactly.
That's where I found it years and years ago. So we're coming up on the break, so I'll just tell you quickly that I mostly use baking soda and vinegar and soap for almost everything. And
almost everything,
I try out different cleaning products because people send them to me as samples, or I see something that's interesting in the store, or I pick up samples at a conference or something. But I always, for the past 30 years, I just keep coming back to baking soda, vinegar, and good old Dr. Bronner's soap or some other brand of liquid soap. We're going to take another break, and then we'll be back again with Annie B. Bond, me, and ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm here with Annie B. Bond. Her website is anniebbond.com. My website is toxicfreetalkradio.com. And when you go there, you can look across the top at the menu and see all the other parts of my website where you can ask a question, look for a product. You can even call me for a consultation and talk to me personally. So there's a lot of resources available. Between Annie and I think we've about got it covered, except for the other 100,000 or so people in the world who are also working on toxics. But we've been doing it for a long time. Both of us have gray hairs, and
No,
not Annie. No,
I do.
There's no beautiful gray hairs.
Look at my picture.
That's
right.
Yeah. No, but I must say, Annie, that your photo is very beautiful. I think it looks very much like you. And
thank you.
Your beauty really comes through, and I think your hair is beautiful. And it just is a testament to how people of every age have their own beauty, and that we don't need to do things like have hair dyes and all those things, because everybody is beautiful in their own way. And I really see that in your photo. I enjoy looking at it all the time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. My daughter did put that up for me, and I was like, oh, no, it shows all my wrinkles and everything. And she said, oh, Mom, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I think everybody should go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and look at Annie's picture.
Oh,
and then go to her
you.
Website and see the big picture, where you can see her beautiful hair flowing. I had to cut that part out to conform to my tiny picture size. But really,
Oh, thank you. Well, no, it is a testament to, like, it's being okay to have white hair and wrinkles, right? So
It is.
Yeah.
They can be beautiful, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're now in our last segment of the show. Doesn't the hour go by really fast?
Oh, and it does. I was just thinking that. It's so fun to talk with you.
Thank you. Well, we'll have you on again because there's so much more for us to talk about. But before we get to the end of the hour, I'd just like you to give us some tips, since you started with pesticides as being the thing that you thought was the most damaging to health. Give us a few tips of things now. Once people get rid of their pesticides under the sink, how are they going to control the pests in their home?
Great. I've got three that are good ones. One is for sugar ants that come into the house in the spring. Another is for fleas, and another is for ticks. And these are three that I know are cause people a lot of concern.
Tell us
pace me so that I make sure to get them all across.
First. Tell us the flea one first, because we just got new kittens yesterday, and they come from a house that has a little bit of fleas, so we're keeping them locked up in the bathroom until we solve the flea problem. We're doing pretty well by using a herbal tick and flea product that kills them, and they're scratching less, but we want to make sure we get all of it. So tell us about fleas first, and then the other two.
Yeah, no, that's really good, and I'm glad you mentioned cats, because actually this remedy does not work well around cats. However, if you have them separate and have the doors open, windows open, and you rinse really, you know, you process this pretty well, I think you'd be okay. With a lot of things in life, when it comes to toxic, sometimes you're in the middle of a slippery slope. You have to make a decision according to, it's better than what could be. This is a natural solution, but it has natural volatile organic chemicals released, so you need to be careful if you have asthma. But I am incredibly sensitive, and I had a really bad flea problem with dogs, and this is how I absolutely eradicated fleas. It turns out that D-limonene, which is the extract from citrus peels, kills all stages of the flea, absolutely every stage.
Great.
There's nothing better than it. And so you could do it in a less concentrated way, Deborah, I think, for the cats, you could boil a bunch of orange peels, things like that, and use the liquor that's left. But you can buy pure D-limonene citrus solvents in many, many different types of stores. You just want to make sure it's just pure 100% D-limonene. And okay. I put this like a quarter of a cup to a cup of water in a good spray bottle, and I'll spray, or I'll put maybe even about that much in a gallon of water, and wash the floors if you can do that. And then it just literally kills all stages. So you constantly are, killing, you know, the larvae, anything will be dead. And so it's like a miracle. It really is. It just completely.
That's very good to know.
Yeah, it's a great one, because I know some very dear people that actually have died because of flea bombs, and they got so sick and they just couldn't live in our world anymore. You know, it was just terrible. And then another problem is that I've had a lot of trouble because where I live in a epicenter of ticks and Lyme disease, and I've had a lot of cases of it, and I can't get rid of my dogs because I love them. And because they bring the ticks in. But one thing, I did research high and low in herbalist texts and things like that when I wrote my book, Better Basics for the Home, because I wanted to find a natural tick repellent. And the herb that I discovered was rose geranium, and you can buy an essential oil of rose geranium, and you need to only put like a drop on your dog's collar, but it is a very, very good repellent. And I like to make a little bit of an olive oil with, or whatever is a convenient oil that I have in the house, with about 10 or like, let's say a tablespoon of oil to maybe 10 drops of rose geranium. And then I could dab that on my skin, and that's a good repellent. There are also carbon dioxide generators that you can buy you can put outside that will cover up to a quarter of an acre, even a half an acre. And the ticks will go and they'll be drawn to the carbon dioxide generator as if it were a deer. And that's another good way of getting rid of them. And then for the sugar ants, I have this sugar ant hotel that I've made. It's really fun for kids to make too. And I get a bunch of artichoke, the small marinated artichoke jars. I just sort of save them over time. And you punch 8 or 10 holes in the top, and then mix up sugar and borax, about a half and half combination, and then put some cotton balls or crumpled up toilet paper into the artichoke jars. Pour about half full of the borax and sugar, and then fill with water to about half a inch to the top. Screw on the top, and put them around your kitchen or wherever you're getting the ants. And it's amazing, the ants just line up to get in there, and it's much better than putting out the ant traps. The one thing is that you need to put it doesn't get the queen. That's the only thing, because the ants because because the sugar ants will take the food back to the queen. So you do need to put some borax in various places, like behind a refrigerator or something like that. But but that works well for that. And I've also actually found the delimonene is unbelievable for ants. I mean, they just it works incredibly well for them too. So.
Well, what I've used for many, many years is that I just look and see where they're coming in. You know, they're always marching in a line. And I take a sponge and I wipe them up backwards to wherever the point is where they're coming in. And then I just take regular Elmer's white glue and I put it right where those ants are coming in. And then the next day they'll come in someplace else, and I just keep repeating the process until I've filled up all the little holes. And it never takes more than 3 or 4 days, and then it's permanently done. And I discovered this when I was living in an apartment building in San Francisco where they were going to spray every unit for ants. And I said, you are not coming in here with those pesticides. And the management allowed it, and I said, I'll take care of it myself. And this is what I did, and I was the only apartment that did not have ants. Even though they were spraying every month, everybody else still had ants. And so that's been my go-to ant remedy since then. It just always works.
It's classic integrated pest management. And the same thing with mice. I used to do the same thing. The only thing that's worked for the mice in my house is to keep finding, you know, close the doors, make sure it's completely dark and see if there's any light coming in anywhere and plugging it up. And that's the only thing that really has worked for me for mice. And it's just simple common sense, right?
There's basic guidelines for integrated pest management, especially in the home, because you can do it like in the garden or in a ranch or whatever. But the basic guidelines are that you want to make your house to be not attracting pests. So if you have food sitting out, or you've been eating in bed and you leave the dirty dish on the floor, the pests are going to find that, and you're just going to bring them right in. Or if you have a leaking water pipe, they need water. Basically, they need food, water, and shelter. And so if you're providing that, you're going to have pests. And if you want to have pests out of your house, then you get rid of the things that are attracting them, and you do things like put up screens on the windows and things like that. And that pretty much handles it. And but having spent many years living out in a forest, you also need to just be willing to live with a certain amount, be able, you know, get to know your pests and see if they really are pests, where they're causing damage, or they're just friendly insects that may be eating other insects that are more damaging. I really had a good time learning about all the different insects that we live with and see if I needed to control them or befriend them. And of course, you could just say, no pets in my house, and tell them to go away.
And hope for the best. I did that with my mice, and they just kept coming stronger and stronger.
Well, we're at the end of our time now. I'm sorry to cut us off so abruptly, but it's been great catching up with you, Annie, and we'll have you on again.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. Go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com to find out more, and we'll be back tomorrow.